All right, good morning, everybody. I'm Greg, Cornell University, and this is a project I started when I was at Virginia Tech with Mark Williams, who's a soil microbiologist. And so I'll try to do that end of the project enough justice and explain the results that came out of his lab. The project was part of a series of projects looking at sustainable practices for establishing new orchards. And so orchards, as many of you in this room understand in the eastern U.S., have moved from what's on the top there, large orchards, widely spaced, with root systems that can go quite deep, can explore the soil, can access nutrients, can access water, to what we see on the bottom there with dwarfing rootstocks, very small systems, typically only within the first, 6, 12 inches of soil, and especially in the systems that we have now where we're irrigating them, the soils don't have, and we have the trees trellised, there's not a lot of incentive for those root systems to explore deeper in the profile. So we're looking at how do we establish these orchards quickly, how do we do it sustainably, and we also have other questions that are involved with this as many of the orchards that we are working with are in the Chesapeake Bay watershed, and so any fertilizers that are applied to those systems have the potential to be draining to that water system. And right now, we don't have regulations against fertilizers in horticultural systems, but certainly the agronomic crops and the animal production systems do. So the fertilizer recommendations that we give to growers now are pretty old and really based on data that stretches back several decades. We've updated some of them. There's been some work by mineral nutritionists to try to come up with more exact recommendations for dwarfing systems, but many of these are based on what crop losses there were in larger trees, and you can go into the extension books and go back issues and issues and find it back decades that the recommendations are almost the same. So can we come up with recommendations that are based not just on nutrition, but also based on soil quality or soil health, which is this concept. It's hard to always come up with a precise metric of what is soil health or soil quality, but it's the idea that there's additional functions to the soil. It's not just this media for growing trees that can hold the trees in place or supply water and nutrients, but there's these other positive environmental benefits that can promote plant and animal health. And so we can kind of see a more of an ecosystem approach to understanding soils and how our trees interact with the environment in that cartoon on the right side there. So I've been interested in mulches for a long time. In my PhD project, looked at them as part of an organic system. There's so many benefits that can be found, but they're not always found. And so there's a lot of site specificity involved with mulches. When do they work? When do they not work? And the same is true of compost. So increasing tree growth, increasing soil organic matter because we're adding carbon to the soil, therefore improving the quality, the biological activity, minerals can be increased. We have better water holding capacity, less leaching of nutrients. We prevent erosion. We have some ongoing work looking at mulches in organic systems for weed control, very, very effective. And so, a lot of these things are not particularly new, but again, what we're seeing is in our conventional orchard systems, really not much adaptation of this practice, and largely because there's a big cost involved, and so it can be up to $700 an acre to apply mulch to an orchard. And so growers are already being stretched pretty thin, planting orchards that are $25,000 an acre. Additional costs are not always seen as as something that they're interested in doing, and unless they know that there's going to be a benefit to it. So I'm just going to skip forward here and then back. So the hypothesis for the experiment was, can we integrate organic carbon-based mulches and fertilizers with inorganic fertilizers to increase organic matter? And then create microbial communities that are more supportive of sustainable and productive orchard systems. So more broadly, it goes back to ideas of, can we support a sustainable orchard system development in the Mid-Atlantic? So the project had three sites, two in Virginia, one in Tyro, Virginia at a commercial orchard, one in Winchester at the experimental station there, and then the third site in at a commercial farm in Maryland. There were eight treatments, and it was a split plot design. So half the treatments, the main plot effect was mulch or no mulch. And then within each of those, we had a control, we had a compost, we had calcium nitrate, and then we had an integrated calcium nitrate plus compost treatment. And so those were called the fertilizer treatments, and they were applied at 40 tons per hectare of nitrogen. So we figured out what the amount of nitrogen was in that compost, applied 20 pounds of nitrogen from calcium nitrate, the other 20 from the compost. All the trees at all three sites were Honeycrisp on bud 9. They were all planted at the same time, same distance. All were trellised and irrigated. They were all in conventional farms with standard practices for pest and weed control. And then the other interesting thing that we did was, instead of taking one substrate and using it at all the sites, we locally sourced the compost and the mulch. And the reason we did that is because there's a huge transportation cost. If we really want to try to recommend this to growers, they're going to need to find these materials locally. So we're trying to see what effects are universal. What effects can they find? If they locally find the mulches, do we get the same effects at all these different locations? And it was a randomized complete block with the split plot. So the main plot again, mulch, no mulch, and then the compost and calcium nitrate were the splits. So we ran the experiment for 3 years, from 2014, the year of planting, to 2016. We measured pretty standard measurements, you know, horticultural parameters, tree growth, yields in the third year when we had some fruit in two of the three sites. And then we looked at root zone soil for a number of chemical and biological properties. It says 6 centimeter there. We actually did a 10 centimeter depth, but still fairly shallow depth, and that's where the majority of the root zone is. That's where the majority of the root zone is interacting with the treatments that we applied. So further down, if we were to look at that below the 10 centimeter depth, we've done this previously, you just don't see very much of an impact there. And then we did a number of different molecular techniques to look at the soil microbial communities, both bacteria in the 16S rRNA region and fungi in ITS, fairly standard regions to look at for both of those. We used chyme and pie crust for our data analysis. So you can see on the bottom right there, when we do our soil sampling, we move the mulch aside. And then we go through, but we don't move. You can see there's kind of this, what we'd call the O horizon, you know, right above the soil line where there's a higher amount of organic matter from the breakdown, from the decomposition of the mulch. And so we do sample through that, and then we homogenize the sample. And again, the mulch and the compost were locally sourced. The Virginia sites both used the same chicken manure compost. It was another part of this experiment because there's a big poultry industry in the Mid-Atlantic. And for them, compost or manure is a waste stream. And so, you know, it's a potential win-win for them. The Maryland site was used a very unique compost source that he was able to make on farm. And he worked with some laboratory to acquire this mouse rat bedding from their mouse cages. So anyway, that's a whole other story, but that's what we used because that's what they were using on the farm already. So I went through my hypotheses. So the tree growth and yields, no differences among treatments at planting through to the second year. So, you know, the trees were all equal at planting. There was no covariate effect there. But by the third year, two out of the three sites had greater tree growth under the mulch treatments. We didn't see any difference in tree growth with the different fertilizer. So even with compared our control with calcium nitrate to our control with no fertilizer, there was no difference. So in other words, calcium nitrate for our experiment didn't increase tree size, nor did the compost, nor did the compost plus calcium nitrate. But the mulch did at two out of three sites. There were no differences in fruit number in the third year when we did have a crop on two out of the three sites, but the smaller trees then would have had a greater yield efficiency. But probably, you know, we only ran this experiment for 3 years. If we were to continue that experiment going forward, those smaller trees likely would have less yield, right? So it's really important in these high-density systems to establish as much of that canopy in years one, two, and three as possible. Soil organic matter increased under the mulch at the site that had the lowest organic matter to start. So we had one site that was 2.5% organic matter, and then the other sites had very high organic matter, actually over 6%, which is very, very high. The rates of compost that we're using weren't enough to increase organic matter. So we're not doing it like a gardener would do, where they stick a pile of compost on and mix it up. These are kind of more agricultural rates of compost. It's like a scattering of compost in there to get our nitrogen rates high enough. We found that the test for active carbon, which is one of the tests that's being promoted to test soil health, is actually a really was a better measure than measuring organic matter. It's quick and easy to do. There's some field tests available for it, and we found that two out of the three sites had greater active carbon under the mulch treatments by the end of the third year. Again, no difference in those fertilizer treatments. So it might be something that we really want to look at. It's kind of this idea of introducing soil health practices for orchards. I think active carbon is one that we want to look at. Mineral nutrition, lots of data that was kind of all over, and I kind of tried to summarize it as best I can here. The phosphorus, year one was increased at all sites by the compost treatments, whether it was compost alone or compost and the calcium nitrate. But by year three, so we only did the treatments at the first year. We didn't continue those treatments in year two or three. We did it at planting, and then we let the experiment go, and then we just went back and sampled from those sites. So by year three, only one site, the site with the lowest organic matter, had a greater phosphorus content, and it was considerably higher. It was like 30 times higher with the compost than without. Potassium, the compost, again, was greatest at that site, but mulch was greatest at the Maryland site, so there's some, you know, slight treatment nuances there, and then some treatment differences were found for these other minerals, but they weren't of large magnitude. So, you know, we know we're adding things to the soil with the compost and mulch, but it wasn't like we had this big, we're really changing things a lot. And then, so then by the third year, there were really minimal differences in the soil at this one site in Tyro. Leaf nitrogen, we found that the calcium nitrate resulted in greater leaf nitrogen than the other treatments. So remember I said there wasn't really a big change in tree growth, but there was an increase in the leaf nitrogen. So we got some of that calcium nitrate into the trees, but it didn't really show forth to increase tree size. And by the third year, there was no difference among the treatments. So there was no effect of that breakdown of mulch or compost to start adding organic matter into the soil. And then potassium increased soil concentrations may have some, you know, we saw it in the soil, but we didn't really see that effect in the leaves. But it wasn't strong. There might be, if we were to go back and sample, some longer-term effects there. So hopefully that's not too faded there. The looking at the microbial communities on the left, fungal communities on the right, bacterial communities. And so the strongest differences in both the fungi and in the bacteria was site, and then secondarily mulch. So site is on the x-axis, mulch is on the right axis. We didn't see a lot of effect in the differences among the different fertilizer treatments. So mulch is definitely, you know, we different microbial communities exist in all these different sites. Not surprising, they're different soils. But we can really change things with mulch in all these sites, regardless of what the original microbial communities were. We use some of these newer techniques that allow us to not just look at fingerprints of community structure, but also function. What we see is that for the bacterial communities, the mulches were really promoting genes that were being upregulated for things like carbon and nitrogen cycling, and then things like the lipopolysaccharides, which are producing endotoxins. So there might be some disease suppressive effect happening there too. And so this was across all three sites. And then when we look at the fungal communities, what we see is under the mulch treatment, an increase in arbuscular mycorrhizae. And so that's really interesting. We see it really strongly under the mulch, which are the on the left side there, less strongly on the compost treatments, but still some effect and an additive effect between mulch and compost. So just in conclusion, variable effects, and it's really important not only to look at long-term impacts of these treatments, and so, you know, 3 years, honestly, not really long enough, but it's as long as we're able to run the experiment for. And I think, you know, we really need to, as educators or extension specialists, when we're talking about compost and mulches, it really has to be site-specific and has to be really based on what the initial soil measurements are, the soil types are, before we say mulch is always good, compost is always good, because it didn't always have a positive effect in all of our treatments, or all of our sites, rather. So thanking the growers in particular, who are farm cooperators, and the funding agency, SARE, and of course all the very, very many people who helped with this project along the way.
Great. Thanks, Reid. Is Mateus here?
I'm presenting Mateus.
Oh, you're doing Mateus. Okay. So we don't have time for questions, but Dario is not going to be here, the second to last presentation, so we'll save the questions for that session. So just to keep us on time, Todd, you're going to present the next one.